Hello, this is Maureen Knight. I'm self-recording my own interview for the Telling Tales project. This is Telling Tales project number 32. The date is the 19th of September and I'm at Wellington in Somerset. My date of birth is 2/12/53. I was born in Hove, Sussex. I got involved in folk when I had my silver wedding, which was in 1999. We had a barn dance and we just got hooked on folk dance at that stage. I'd sort of been involved in folk before that. I was at Whitelands College, which is the Maypole College. I avoided Maypole dancing like the plague, but I love it now. And I'd also been a music trained primary teacher, where I've taught all sorts of songs from Cecil Sharp's collections and also folk dancing, because I just believed it was something to do. But it wasn't until 1999 that Roger Sylvester and I got really hooked on folk dancing. We lived in the Midlands then, and we danced at Stony Stanton Rugby Folk Dance Group, and we started to go to the festivals at Lichfield and just started going to Ulster Contra. Roger had done quite a lot of dancing, Scottish dancing, as a teenager, so he understood how the dances worked. And I was just one of those women that just got pushed around a bit in the dance because I didn't really understand what was going on. I'm not sure whether it was 2002 or 2003, somehow we got involved in the Halsey Manor Contra Week with Rodney Miller, David Surrett, and I'm not sure who the caller was, but the other guests were the great and good of the UK contra scene. Nobody knew us at all. And one morning at breakfast, Liz Hope sat opposite us and asked questions. Well, she's inclined to do that. And I'd seen that a musician's workshop was on the programme, and I brought a recorder with me because I thought I would be able to join in, but I'd quickly realised how out of my depth I was. I'm a proficient musician, but I just didn't know any of the tunes. Roger, however, was very proud of my ability, so he told Liz how clever I was, because I always knew exactly which notes not to play in the hymn tunes, and I could get away with all sorts of things by knowing what not to play. And I was kicking him under the table because I realised I was totally out of my depth at that stage, but he wouldn't stop telling her. And by the end of breakfast, Liz Hope had persuaded me to sit in the corner in the music workshop and just watch. Now, within minutes of that workshop starting, David Surrett had a guitar in my hands and I was following his lead. It was easy chords like D, G and C. And from that moment, I was really, really hooked onto playing for dancing. That time we had the room 12 over the bar, and I drifted off to sleep every night as the playing session continued, listening to wonderful tunes. And I commented that to a lady I met at the music session playing piano. And she said she was having trouble sleeping for the very same reason, because she could hear all the tunes and she knew when they were going wrong. That was Maggie Fletcher, the piano player for the Blue Mountain Band, who I've since been on several courses with, and she's helped me progress with my own piano playing. Anyway, Roger and I went home and we contra-danced at every opportunity, and we became part of the display team at Rugby Folk Dance Group, learning dances like Newcastle and Shepherd's Delight. I still didn't really understand what I was doing, but got by because I could copy what Roger was doing. He died suddenly in 2004, and I realised I could stay home and cry or go out and dance, so I did that instead. My friends from Rugby Folk Dance Group, Uppingham, Stony Stanton, Loughborough, took me dancing, and I went to festivals on my own, and in that time I learned to be a good dance partner and would dance with anybody who would dance with me, although I still don't think I really understood the dances at all. I came to Halsey a couple of times for the Zesty Contra and got to know Beryl Jukes from Cornwall, who's a lovely, generous lady who looked out for me because I was so lonely. Halsey becomes part of your family. Then, at a Stonesfield weekend, I was introduced to Graham Knight by Hilary Turner. That was 2006, not long after his wife Wendy Crouch, the writer of that well-known dancer Winter Solstice had died. We met again later on at a festival, found that we'd got interest in conservation and green issues and gardening, and, you know, as well as dance. And we were married in 2007. Graham actually proposed to me in room 11, the one with the beautiful ceiling, at the Andrew Shaw dance course. And he'd bought champagne and glasses already for my acceptance. I was well out of my depth at Andrew Shaw's course. That is the course that attracts the very best of the UK's Play for Dancers each year. The music was sublime with Paul Hutchison and John Hymas. And then yet again, I struggled through the dances with help from the lovely Helen Batalana, who's my inspiration for what a good dancer should be like. She's always in the right place, she never shoves, she never offers spoken advice, and somehow, through smiles and gestures, she gives confidence to uncertain dancers. We came to Halsey, I think New Year 2006, something like that, although Graham had spent part of the festive season at Halsey, and typecast as a tree in some stunt Chris Turner had put on, and I joined in at the New Year's party. Halsey at Christmas is a wonderful supportive place where folk is who want to have childlike fun can gather without having to sort of bother their families, but it's also a place where people who are lonely at Christmas can come and either join in or not join in as much as they want to. I think that was the year we started laying the overgrown hedge above the tennis courts, encouraged by Cliff, the manager, and various board members. We returned to courses during that year, including 1 year when we came at Christmas. I think it might have been 2006. We arrived early and were the only guests in the manor, and we were given the key to the door. So we went out to the pub for our dinner, and then we sat in the lounge where I played the piano, and we imagined that we were the lord and lady of the manor. It was lovely. I think that year we were typecast as the courting couple in the 12 Days of Christmas. I think it was that year we had the Christmas house party that we were invited to bring our teddy bears, and we had fun with a long ways dance for bears. Everyone sat on chairs knee to knee down the hall with the teddies ready to dance. So we had things like the moves in the dance went circle four paws round, a four paw star, and all those sorts of things, except that Graham sadly had to give his teddy bear to his brother when he was a little boy, and so he didn't have a bear, and so he had to use his hand as a sooty in the nude. As you progress down the set, as you progressed in the dance, the ones moved down, the twos moved up, the people with no chairs at the ends had to run to the other end by the time the music started. It was such fun, and I understand it's now an annual occurrence. There's also a teddy bear treasure hunt where half the teddy bears hid in a visible public place and the rest of us all looked for them. They were hidden on bookshelves, mantel shelves, in the Christmas tree, on top of the clock, the bookcases, and three bears never got found, and I still think they cheated. One was in the library porch, which isn't strictly speaking in the manor, and another little one was hiding behind a big bear on a bookshelf, so it wasn't visible, so I don't think that counts either. And the third one that nobody found at all had been gaffer taped to the underside of a table, so it was in a public place, and you could see it if you lay on the floor, but actually you couldn't really see it. Now, that was the first year I played carols with Chris Turner. We have a nice line in carols. We agree a tune, we agree a key, and then we start playing and we try really hard, neither of us, to be in the same key at the same time. Chris also does quite a nice line in sort of boogie-woogie carols, and I really don't know how the singers joined in, but they just stood and laughed. We managed to do a quick repeat performance of that at the Members' Week on Wednesday this week. Graham and I moved to Somerset in October 2007, and we became part of the Halsey volunteer team for the redecoration of the long room, although we were still working on laying the hedge in our spare time. The long room redecoration was in memory of Cole Charles's husband, and the volunteers worked hard all day and then went out dancing at local clubs in the evening. This was when I got to know Frances Oates, as we sat on the floor in the Marden room cleaning parts of the chandeliers with vinegar and water. She was later put on the scaffolding frame and not let down until she had cleaned and polished each part of the two huge chandeliers. Frances and I also got to know each other better as we cleaned the long room floor with washing up scrubbers on our hands and knees to get all the, after the ceiling painters had finished, to get the white, the blobs, little blobs of white paint off. There's been quite a lot of controversy over the colour scheme in the long room. The previously outdated and dull leafy wallpaper with the dark green ceiling was changed to something to make the room lighter. An expert had recommended wallpaper, and which is the colour scheme at the moment. And when it came to it, there weren't enough rolls of wallpaper in the country that could be bought in this particular colour. So they had to change something else. The idea was to get the whole room looking lighter, which is why there were, and to look more welcoming, which is why there were extra wall lights and big mirrors and clock were donated in order to achieve this. It was also hoped to replace the dull red curtains which belonged to the previous scheme, but this wasn't affordable. So Christine Corquette and Moira Gutteridge took them down into the entrance hall to repair and to vacuum clean. A stray needle left from an earlier sewing got stuck in Moira's hand and she ended up in accident and emergency. We all worked hard at the Volunteers Week, achieved a lot and had loads of fun. One of the things was going round to, every evening we went out to a local folk dance group, and of course there were quite a number of us, perhaps 10 sometimes, majority men, and so we had a couple of frilly petticoats that we took with us, and then they wore them when they danced as women. I really don't know what the club's made of us, but we enjoyed it, and it's something I really look back on to. Another memory from the volunteer weekends is, for some reason, Chris Turner had us take all the furniture out of the main hallway, the entrance hall, and then we had to put it back in and see if we could make it look better. I don't think we did manage it, but we got some insights into what could be possible in the main hall. Another memory of the Volunteers Weekend is with Gerald Widdicombe painting a bedroom ceiling, I think it was, with a cardboard box on his head because he'd washed his hair that morning and didn't want to get paint on his hair. We had... We teased Neville Gardner about some compost bins we'd set up round the grounds. We told him that they were, in fact, goat pens. Now, he, I think, believed that because earlier in the year we'd had a set of miniature goats that kept appearing in the grounds. For a while they lived in the library porch, and they came out trit-trot across the lawns. They ate everything that they could reach. They obviously left memories of them all over the car park, and people walked in on their shoes onto the carpet. It used to annoy Alan Corquette quite a lot, so he'd go out and chase them away, and they'd run up the hill, wait till he'd gone in, and then they'd come back down again. This went on for, I guess it was 2, 3, 4 weeks, and eventually the manor found out who they belonged to. The goats were returned to their owners, and that was quite good for a couple of weeks until they came back. They were terrible escape artists. In the end, the people whose pets they were didn't want them back, and the manor helped them find a good home. So it was quite likely that we might have been making goat pens, and so while we teased Neville about it, it was perhaps believable, and perhaps we were naughty to tease him so much. I think it was part of the end of one of those volunteer sessions that they put the Christmas decorations up and they forgot to put the star on the big Christmas tree. And it was in the entrance hall, and it was just such a huge tree that the top couldn't be reached from the stairs, no matter how hard we reached out to do it. And so in the end, Graham and my husband Graham Knight and Chris Turner held a ladder while Derek Dean shimmied up it and to put the decorations on the top. We had lookout posts on the doors, as the manager Cliff had recently been on a health and safety course and he had to walk through with his hands over his eyes pretending that he hadn't actually seen what was going on. I've been thinking about all sorts of changes since we moved to Somerset 8 years ago. We've seen several changes of management. The management style changed from having a hotel-like manager to having chief executive officers who look after the programme, and then having duty managers to help run the manor for the guests. Board members such as Alan Corkett and Robin Williams have taken responsibility for the day-to-day running of the manor. We've now seen four chief executive officers. That's Sarah Knight, who's no relation to us, Anthea Dean, Paul James and now Crispian Cook. They've all brought their own style of management and ideas on how to make things different. And they've all sorted out some area of the manor. Graham and I have continued helping with the gardens. And when Paul James became chief executive officer, I took on the role of the gardening volunteers organisers. What we're trying to do is work here on Fridays when courses come in, and then I catch up with the arriving guests or newcomers and we talk about the gardens. And during the course of the weekend, some of them will join in. We've got gloves and tools ready for anyone who wants to join in. And anybody who mentions, oh, have you noticed those roses need pruning, or another job they've noticed, we always realise that they're enough of an expert to know what they're doing. When Cliff was manager, we planted a hawthorn hedge along the front edge on the Horsey Lane as a health and safety barrier. And the intention was to encourage wildlife and let it grow big enough to lay in a traditional style and become a strong prickly barrier with flowers in the spring and berries in the autumn. We have a continuous feud with the groundsman over it, because he wants to cut it to a neat shape and he won't let us cut it. He won't leave it to be laid in the traditional way because it looks untidy. Every year, despite being told not to, he cuts it. He cuts the flowers off so it doesn't have berries, and he's prevented the hedge from being looked after correctly. Every year, whichever chief executive officer is tells him not to do it again, and every year it happens again. One thing I've been responsible for the idea of, but perhaps not all the physical work on, was the Golden Garden, ready for the 50th anniversary. My original idea was to do the little triangular garden on the croquet lawn side of the Mews Path, but the Golden Committee suggested that we might like to take the other side where the thatched cottage is. And Bonnie Sartin and Graham Knight have worked really hard on removing all the old lilac roots and all the other horrible old things that were in overgrown plants that were in that area. Last September, that's 2014, the Wendy House was rethatched due to a kind donation, and Graham pruned back the beech tree a bit to stop it from spoiling the new thatch. We still think the tree needs resizing, as it's too big for the space, but yeah, that's one of those projects that we need some extra money to do. We've planted what I would describe as thuggish plants in the Golden Garden, ones that will set seed or will spread, who are perhaps weeds in their own right, but they also the rabbits don't like them. We've got a huge rabbit population at Horsey, so I'm going for rabbit resistant plants, so I fill up the spaces with things like tomato plants, which they don't seem to like because they're nasty taste. I didn't reckon on the deer eating all the newly planted wallflowers back in November 2014, So we were just left with a row of little sticks. The deer ate every blade of leaf off them. Those did recover. We've spent a lot of time sort of making things, sort of windmills and things that will stop animals eating plants. Very unfortunately, three stray sheep got into the grounds in July 2015, and they ate all the marigolds and sunflowers and everything that was along the front of that path. We've planted tomatoes along there again. Anyway, family camp, who come at the end of July, were invited to make suitable flags and scarecrows to discourage sheep and deer from eating the golden garden. And they have created the most incredible golden plants, which not only involved everybody in family camp, even the very little toddlers, but it's allowed the garden to grow again. There are some very odd looking plants made out of yellow plastic plates. There's lots of golden plants on there. And only yesterday did I watch somebody walk up to the Philadelphus, which has got golden yellow fabric flowers on it, and go and sniff those flowers. They hadn't realised they weren't real. We have volunteers who work in the gardens. They pay to come on dance courses, and then they spend every minute of their spare time and some of their dancing times working out in the garden, and this is the only way we can keep the gardens neat and tidy. The golden garden has taken my eye off the main beds, but now that's pretty complete, we can concentrate for looking at ways of making the rest of the garden more sustainable and easier to look after. Winter 2014 to 15 saw Graham preparing the water garden perimeter ready for the soil that will be moved in preparation for the new buildings. We had quite a lot of storm damage with trees in the water garden in the autumn of 2014, which meant safety work had to be done along the Horsey Lane initially, and we've had volunteers on two occasions that we've had standing in the road stopping traffic while the trees were removed. One of those days was described as a staff member as being biblical weather, and the four of us working were totally soaked to the skin. We're hoping these trees can be laid in a traditional barrier around the property, but they were previously so badly maintained that they mostly fell into the bullock field on the other side because of the way they were weighted. On the New Year course, just into 2015, we had a wonderful afternoon where six of us went into the bullock field, where the bullocks had gone on to winter accommodation by then, and half a dozen of us also spent a very cheerful and muddy afternoon throwing logs across from the field into the water garden. I fully support the idea of the activity centre. I think it's going to be lovely up into the woods, and it's going to give us so much more potential for what can be done in the grounds. I'm hoping we're going to be able to have trails so that any school parties or young people coming to the grounds will be able to walk around the grounds and identify the trees and plants and perhaps look for the wildlife. Sadly, the mulberry tree, which we brought back to life and got it fruiting and growing well again, has been, because it had been treated badly over many years because people didn't really know how to look after it. It's a very old tree, and it was the first tree that was cut down to make way for the activity centre, and I think it could have been left for another year, so in which case I could have made cuttings from it. I'm very sad about that. Primarily, I'm at Horsey because I want to dance and play. I've come on many musicians' courses and dancing courses. The gardening and grounds work is what we do as our part of supporting the aims of Horsey Manor, and it means that money can be spent on other things than the gardens. I've attended all sorts of musicians' and dancers' courses, originally perhaps with Alan Corkett and Dave Brown. I've been to music, Playford music courses with Paul Hutchinson, and we were there for the first weekend of the Playford Liberation Front, where dancers and musicians combined ideas to look at Playford dancing in new ways, and we made a video of this. We've made so many friends at Halsey, so many friends here. This year we were able to welcome two American couples to the Contra Week with Stingrays and Lisa Greenleaf. We met them in New Zealand, where we were able to join a coachload of Americans taking Contra dancing round the whole of New Zealand in February 2014. One of the other things I do is I've become an interviewer for the Telling Tales Project. Oh, I didn't really expect to have any time to do this, but I have just loved doing this. I've been able to interview Rodney Miller, David Dean, when he came to bring to look at the seat that's been given in memory of his late wife Peggy. I interviewed Pete Hendy, Madeline Smith, and I was thrilled to interview Maggie Fletcher because she was there when I first came to Halsey. A spin-off I haven't expected from this project is that I interviewed a recorder player and dancer called historical dancer called Hazel Fenton, and we've now started to play for Playford Dances together. I met my main fiddler, Linda Burt, who was part of Alan Corkett's band Meltdown, and she and I played together with Meterite. We've enjoyed playing for the Mosaic group when they came to Halsey a couple of years ago, and then this week we've played for the Salisbury folk dance group when they came on their holiday. Linda also plays at several dance courses at Halsey for various things. Halsey is just so much part of my life. I would be totally bereft if we couldn't come here anymore. There are so many people of very varied folk persuasions who love Halsey, and they're just about everybody I talk to. The members weekend this week, everybody can't wait to come back again. We're all already talking about when are you coming the next time, and for me, I'm looking forward to being part of its future, as well as having been privileged to be a small cog in its wheels during the last 10 years. One of the little things I do is I've enjoyed playing the piano for the community singing at the Christmas Carol concert now for several years. That's the end of my interview. Today is the 19th of September, and this is Maureen Knight, and it's interview 32.